So, dear brothers and sisters, our first reading, so our reading from the Acts of the Apostles over these last couple of days, we've been talking about the persecution of the early church, St. Stephen, who was martyred, and now the persecution of the early church, so much so that in Jerusalem, the Christians have to flee to Judea and Samaria and so on. We're going to see it later on then with Paul being persecuted, Peter, and so on, for the first, well, 3 centuries of the church's life. There were periods of very, very intense persecution. So we see this, the history of these, or the stories of these amazing, courageous people, either who knew the Lord or whose lives had been touched by him. And we see the struggle that they're enduring in order to hold on to their faith. And some might argue or think, why didn't the Lord make it easier for them? If he wants his church to grow, why not make it easier? Why not make it, if you could convert some of the key people, the key influencers of the day, some governors or some the scribes and Pharisees themselves, or who knows, convert some key people in order to avoid all of this suffering, in order to avoid all of this struggle and this opposition. Hold on to that thought for a sec. There's another issue, a thought which I've heard a couple of times in the last couple of years. It's used in counselling circles, and it is bloom where you're planted. Bloom where you're planted. So the idea behind this is, don't live in this attitude of faraway hills are greener. You know, if when I'm finished college, then everything will be fine. When I'm married, then everything will be fine. When I'm married and have kids, then everything will be fine. When I retire, or when the kids move out of the house, then we'll finally have peace. When I retire, when I get my inheritance, so there'll be something in the future, and at that point, then I'll be okay. Then everything will be all right. Then everything will be resolved. Then I can be at peace. Then I can be happy. Okay. So is this, and it's an elusive. It's a very common idea, but it gives us this kind of illusion that happiness will be when something, some present situation which I find difficult, is alleviated or is gone. Now, don't get me wrong, with all of these ideas, we always have to balance them, okay? We're not saying that we should sit in situations of abuse or hurt or anything like that and do nothing about them, no. But we're also not saying that we should be absent from the present because we're so focused on, if this thing is realized in my life, then I'll be happy. So it's neither extreme. You're not living, exposing yourself to unnecessary hurt and violence or people who aren't a good influence on us, and at the same time we're not pitching everything on some future event in order to grant us happiness. So we're living in the present. We're trying to bloom where we are planted. And this is an interesting idea because it's something that I come across often. There was a priest in my own community, and he had some problems with our superior. He's an American priest, and he was based in Italy. And he was complaining to another priest brother of mine. And he said, like, it's just ridiculous. He said, I'm stuck here in Italy now for so long. I'm just sick and tired of it. Like, I'm just some, and I can't believe I'm not getting moved on to another mission. So this other priest brother of mine said to him, so where would you like to go? Where would you like to go? Where would you like to be on mission? And he said, well, I've been to Russia. Janie, I hated that. And Germany, I can't stand the language. And Slovakia, actually they've enough priests there already. And then Latin America, we have a mission out there as well in Uruguay. He said, I visited there, but yeah. So what's left? Italy, I suppose. All right, how do you find it here? I suppose it's better than all of them. So it's actually the best place to be then, is it? Yeah, I suppose. You know, he did a trip of the world, like all our various missions, and realized that where he was might actually have been the best place for him. And it was. I mean, yeah, knowing him and knowing the other missions, it absolutely was. It was. So, but we can be trapped, and it's very easy for any of us, you know, to think that if a certain situation is changed, then everything will be fine, and then finally, you know, my prayers will be answered, and it'll be plain sailing. And yet, the life of all Christians and the life of the lives of the saints seem to have this one element in common. Like, think of the early church, think of the lives of the saints, think of ourselves. That the struggle is part of our lives, and that the struggle might actually be necessary. I was over in Kansas there just for the Easter holidays. I worked there in a parish visiting high schools and Divine Mercy Sunday and so on. And I'm a farmer, and it's a considered a kind of a farming state. It's three times the size of Ireland, with less than the population of about 3 million. So population density of less than a third of that of Ireland. So there's plenty of space. There's tons of room. The fields are just enormous. The roads are incredibly boringly straight. But it's just, but people are good. But then when I was just getting a bit of a tour from some of the locals, they would tell me different stories, or like the name Wichita. Right? Wichita. Like, if that's not an Indian name, I don't know what is. You know, so there are all sorts of places that have these Indian names. The reason for that was because on these flat plains, which are nowhere near as luscious as Irish fields. I'm not saying that to be boastful. I'm saying they needed to be huge because they sustained huge herds of buffalo. But the buffalo had to migrate all the time because the grass wouldn't really replenish. They'd eat it, and then there was no rain. So you kind of get one cut of silage, basically. They get one feed, and then you have to move. So then the Indians would follow them. So those huge, huge plains didn't actually sustain an awful lot of wildlife because they had to keep moving. Okay, don't get lost in detail. But when the settlers came, those first settlers came, the first thing they needed was water. You know, like, because, as I say, the fields are enormous, but there aren't lakes and there aren't rivers around. So if you have no water, your animals die. Or if you arrive there with your horses and your carriages and all of that, you need a water immediately. If you got water, you're good to go. If you didn't, you may die. Okay, so these people, when they got there, like, they were hard workers, an awful lot of Germans and a lot of Irish, actually, as well. So we have a lot all over the place. You have these kind of German influences, or Eastern Europeans. So I visited a town in a place called Pilsen, right? Pilsen, which is German for mushrooms, and I went into the sacristy. And in the sacristy, all of the little drawers, it was written. I think it was Slovak, or Czech, yeah, because it's the hometown of Father Capon, actually, in Pilsen. And so all the instructions in the sacristy are all okay. Again, I digress. Point being, when those people got there, when those settlers got there, or when those first generations got there, they had to work very, very hard. They had to build up everything from scratch, right? They had to find water and then manage it carefully. Then they had to divide off their land. They had to build roads. They had to build mills. They had to build barns. They had to build grain stores. In the early days, those fields, enormous as they are, were tilled with horse and plow or whatever you could pull behind them. One farmer I visited, his farm is 2,800 acres. It's just enormous, enormous. It's unthinkable for us. Like. Obviously they didn't farms that big with one horse. That's just impossible. There just isn't enough daylight. But they had to work. They had to work hard. But because of that, it gave them a great work ethic. It gave them also a great faith. They're Protestant or Catholic, they're quite faithful people because they know they need a God. Without rain, we're going to die, or our crops will fail and all this work is for nothing. So it gave them a great, I say, appreciation for things. So when you, what I find out there is that people have a very, very good work ethic. They work hard. They get up early. They work hard. And then, yeah, they might enjoy a beer in the cool of the evening, but like there is a very solid work ethic. Why? Because of the struggle, they had to. The struggle to survive, they had to. So it bred into them this kind of the opposite to a spirit of entitlement, you know, what we might see today. And that's kind of the problem. If certain generations work very, very hard to build things up, then the next generations come along and it's all done for them, then they don't have to struggle. They don't have to, you know, get stuck in to get to achieve something. It's just handed to them. But you know, the expression, easy come, easy go. You get something for free, as I've seen with a lot of young people, when, you know, they'll be outside playing in their very expensive Adidas tracksuits and they slip on the ground, they rip it open, and I'm like, oh, jeepers, your mom's going to kill us. You know, what's an Adidas tracksuit? 80, 90 quid, 90 euro or something? They're expensive anyway. And the kids will just say, nah, mom will get me another one. Just don't care. Like, just don't. Mom will get me another one. It's fine. You know? So, again, easy come, easy go. Whereas for us at home, my goodness, work clothes were work clothes. Play clothes were play clothes. And your tracksuit was, or your, you know, your good clothes were Sunday best sort of thing. Well, not a tracksuit, but, I mean, you get the point. If you tore your best pair of trousers, that was kind of it. You know, there wasn't going to be another one for another year. So, anyway, so what I'm saying is, the early church, or people in environments where they have to give a lot, the struggle forms us. The struggle teaches us that need for God's grace, that need for Him, actually, in the long term, benefits us. Don't get me wrong, I would never wish any suffering on anybody. But at the same time, bloom where you're planted. If the Lord has allowed you to be here now, if the Lord has ordained things and has arranged things in His providence, has put things together, that you now find yourself in this situation, so in Holy Family, or in a work environment, or in a college environment, or whatever it may be, bloom there. Do not wait for everything to be sorted and everything to be resolved before finally you'll be happy and before finally things will kick off. I mean, I'm even, there's a person I know and she's discerning religious life. And, okay, but she's very, very difficult to live with at home, with her own family. And she's driving them crazy. But you want to enter a religious life and you think your personality is certainly going to change and you'll suddenly become selfless and serving, and you know, keep putting the other's needs above your own. Suddenly, when you enter religious life, I guarantee you, unfortunately, sorry, you won't. You won't. Bloom where you are planted. Start living like a sister now. Start serving your family like they're your sisters, because they actually, well, some of them actually are. You know, bloom now. Stop waiting. You know, everything will be fine once I enter religious life and yada, yada, yada. It's not going to happen. You know, and you'll wonder why when you get there, then everything just turns to pot. Because you had the chance to learn the skills that you need for religious life now. And maybe the Lord is actually arranging and has allowed that you find yourself in this situation at home with brothers and sisters to practice those virtues that you need for when you enter religious life. So He's not delaying it. He's preparing you. Wake up. Use the now. You know, so for all of us, I'm sure all of us have certain ideas. You know, if I was married, or if I was working somewhere else, or if I was rich, or if I was, healed of some ailment or struggle or whatever it may be, then everything will be okay. Certain things will be easier, yes, but if the Lord has allowed this, He has allowed it for a reason. We believe He is a loving Father. So whatever struggle He has allowed in our lives, great beauty can come from that. We think of the cross of Jesus Himself. It's such a horrific implement of torture and death. And now it's the form in which we bless ourselves. So whatever struggle the Lord has allowed in your life, It doesn't mean you're abandoned. It doesn't mean you're forgotten. It doesn't mean you're unworthy of his grace. He wants you to bloom where you are planted, that you recognize that in this struggle we can learn virtue. And then long term, the struggles will pass, but our hearts will be ready for heaven. That virtue will prepare us for heaven. And often that struggle as well, it helps us to keep a focus on what's truly important. So it makes us more aware of and maybe more resistant to some of the other temptations or distractions that are out there, because we're focused on trying to achieve or accomplish or recover from a certain thing. So the Lord does know what he's doing. So we ask the Lord today for that grace to bloom where we are planted and to accept from his providential hand whatever the day brings, whatever he allows for our sanctification.